Hello, Keith. For those listening, you won't be able to see this, but Keith has snowmen on his jumpers and a Santa hat on. And I don't know if you can see mine. I've got some reindeer. It's a bit more subtle. This is our Workshop Banter Christmas party. I've got no eggnog. I've got a cup of tea. I haven't even got a mince pie.
I've got a glass of squash.
A squash. It's pretty wild at Workshop Banter HQ. But we're not actually meeting up. If this is something we should do in the future, we should actually record an episode and be in the same room. Do you think that'd actually change the dynamic of it at all?
That would be interesting to do. We could do like a Workshop Banter Live sometime.
Yeah.
And have either some guests or some listeners. If we did a live thing, it'd be good to do it, each of us in our workshops, maybe. If it's something people want to do, then let us know.
Yeah, we probably should plan this more instead of just me thinking out loud on a podcast.
Last time we spoke, we were both in a little bit of a rut in terms of like getting going and motivation and stuff. Are you kind of over that now?
Oh, I don't know. I think it might have got worse, actually.
Oh, no.
My dad's not been very well, so I've been visiting him a lot, which means I've had very little time here. So when I get back, I've got a rush to get things done. And I've just got back. I think it's 0 degrees outside now as recording this. There's a heavy frost on the cars. And it's just the thought of standing out there. I've got long johns on, you know, proper thermal underwear up. But also, this is a video that might have been out that I got a new planer thicknesser.
Did
from
you?
Machine Mart. And they're quite cheap machines. So technically, it's a downgrade from the one I had, which is exactly the same as what you had with nice induction motor. But I'm thrilled with it, actually.
Yeah.
Because I can just pick it up. It's light. So I can move it out of the workshop easily. In the new workshop, I can just store it under a bench so it's not taking up quite a lot of floor space. And I've realised how much I've missed one. Mm. I was filming the unboxing and putting it together in my living room, and I was looking back at the footage and just thinking how nice the footage looked. And then it realised how much I hate everything I shoot in the workshop.
In the tent kind of thing, yeah.
And then it made me never want to make another video in there. I feel I'm wasting my time making bad videos in the workshop. And the trouble is, you get that in the mindset that you don't like making the videos, then it's self-fulfilling prophecy, isn't it? You make bad videos.
But it is only really that kind of green tint to the lighting that's the issue, isn't it?
Oh, it is. It is. And actually, getting it consistent is easier this time of year because there's no sun at all. When the sun was coming in and out of the clouds, it was very hard. I'm thinking I'm starting the new one in March. 3 months? The end is in sight. Mm. So I'm still in a funk, but actually it's good to know what the funk is about.
Yeah, I mean, I think last time we spoke and I was in a bit of a bad place, that was because of a comment that someone had made. And I hadn't realised that until we were talking about it. And it's strange, isn't it? As soon as you recognise that thing that caused it, you can kind of make adjustments and navigate your way through it. Planer, is it just a thicknesser, I presume? It's not a combination machine.
Oh, no, it's a planer thicknesser. So I had the Titan one, which is a Screwfix own brand, as my first ever one. They were about £100 at the time. I think they're about £150 now, so they're still pretty cheap. And I've told this story many times, but it was just so loud. And then maybe I didn't know much about machines then, but I remember I'd have my 3M over-ear ear defenders on, which were really good. It would almost hurt my ears having it on. I think I've got reasonably sensitive hearing because I'm always going on about noise of things. I used to turn it off so the motor's no longer running and it's just powering down. The first thing I always do when I want to turn the machine off is always rip all my PPE off and get out the room type thing because I just want to, especially in the summer, you've just been sweltering in your mask, you just want some fresh air. And it used to hurt my ears just the machine running down with no power to it. So the bearings must have been just rattly old. It's just so... I mean, I've used Universal Motor table saws, the DeWalt ones, infamous for being loud. This was just another level of loud. But it did a good job. For £100, this new one is pretty much exactly the same machine, but it's so much quieter.
I wonder how. I guess it could just be something mechanical.
Yeah, just build quality, I think. Because you get a lot of machines that look exactly the same with different labels on, and sometimes they are exactly the same with different labels on, but I think sometimes they're built to the same design, but maybe the quality of the components and the build quality, and this is definitely an example of that.
But I'm totally with you on the noisy machines thing. I've had comments in the past that say, why are you so concerned with how loud it is? Because obviously I'm in a fully insulated workshop, so I'm not necessarily bothering people outside. And I'm wearing ear defenders, so they're like, you know, what is the issue? It's like, well, I just find them unpleasant. I just hate using noisy machines.
So we both got ear defenders that play music or podcasts or whatever through them. I mean, there's a whole argument of maybe you shouldn't be listening to music and things.
I mean, it's not for everyone, is it, listening to music or listening to podcasts while they work? But it just depends on the person, I think. I mean, for me, it helps me concentrate. Some people find it distracting, don't they? But yeah.
They do. And I think maybe with an audiobook, which I'm a big fan of, you could get caught up in the story. But it all depends what you're doing. If you're sanding, there's not much that can go wrong.
Mm.
Other things, maybe using the table saw, you want to be pretty much very in the moment.
Yeah.
So have you got anything new in the workshop since we spoke last?
I've got a couple of small accessories that came through from CTS, which are vacuum attachments, like, you know, the brush things?
Mm.
So I quite often use, when I sand something and I want to get the dust off, usually I just use a dustpan brush to brush it all away, which isn't ideal because you're stirring up loads of dust and then breathing it in. I've always had one of those brush attachments for the vacuum, but I could never find an attachment that fitted, which is really frustrating. So you end up gaffer taping it on or whatever. But CTS have just released these things for their one-click system that click into the attachment, that the collar cuff thing that they sell. And it's a 3D printed thing. And they've got some nice vacuum brushes as well. So now I can click it into the hose, no risk of it falling off or anything, no gaffer tape needed. So that I've used loads over the past week because I've been working on a kitchen island, which is another project that I mentioned probably a long time ago, and I just haven't been able to get further forward with it, mainly because I was waiting on materials. Spent probably 5 days working on that project so far, and it's been so good just to get my teeth into a big woodworking project in the workshop again, because I've been doing so many things over the summer outside in the garden and in the house and other things. So it's just been nice to spend some quality time in the workshop again.
I've got 3 things to talk about what you just said, so let's see how many I can remember by the end of this monologue.
We need a notepad.
Yeah, I normally sit with a notepad. Oh, the CTS, they haven't sent me anything. I'm very upset, but that sounds
great.
Get
in touch with them and ask if you can get them, because they're really good.
One thing I've always wanted, and I think I've seen it like on the Rockler emails. I don't know if you have, I think I've unsubscribed, but I bought something for Rockler once, so you get an email every day, is the really fine, flexible nozzle for, like, to get into the nooks and crannies.
The bendy thing, yeah.
Yeah. I think you always see people that do, like, car detailing. It's very good for getting in the vents and things. But I feel with machinery, like for my bandsaw, blade guides and the bits in the planer thickness, and like just a really fine little nozzle to get in there and suck bits out would be great.
Yeah.
Kitchen island, is it for you?
It's not for me, no. In fact, I think I'm going to do an auction or something. I'm probably just going to stick it on eBay and say if anyone's interested in buying it, and maybe donate some money to charity or something like that as well. I don't know. I need to figure that out yet. I went on Shipley. Have you used Shipley before?
Yes.
So I went on there because I was just curious as to what it would cost if I wanted to send this kitchen island, because if I put it on eBay, I want to know whether I need to deliver it, whether it's collection only, or whether I could feasibly send it somewhere. So I went on to Shipley for a quote. I just did it from Norwich to Bristol because I thought that's relatively far away. That'll do. So I put in a Bristol postcode. The first quote I got was £365. And then throughout the course of the night, and even this morning, I'm still getting the quotes coming through. It's now down to £85. There were people that sent me their initial quote of like £320, let's say, who have now seen that somebody's quoted much lower than them, and they've lowered it to like £100. And it's like, well, you clearly didn't give me your best price straight up, which I can understand. You know, this is business after all. But I should imagine a lot of people go on Shipley. They get a few quotes in the first hour, and then they'll just plump for one. But the trick is really just to wait as long as you can until the prices come down. There'll be people that are driving from Norwich to Bristol to do some other delivery who could do it at a much better price, kind of thing. So yeah, the trick is to wait and be patient.
Yeah, absolutely. I've done it a few times, and then people have you've accepted the quote and then they've withdrawn it as well. And then you do the quote again and the same people that have just cancelled it bid again. So I guess they've got a bit of software that does it.
Automatically, yeah.
Which is just annoying. But yeah, I moved house through, I don't think it was Shipley, but one of these sites where you put it in. And it was okay, but it was nerve-wracking, I have to say. And I'm not sure I'd do it again. These two guys turned up in a van. I think it was like a Mercedes Sprinter, long wheelbase. So it's a big van, but not a big van to move a house. And we got it all in, minus some wood. Because they just want you to list things. And when you're doing the quote, you can't list every last item. You do roughly what things are. We got it all in, and they're like, oh, we've got two other pickups on the way. Like, you're joking. How are you going to get that in? And also, for my customer experience, like, well, we're driving to the house. I want you to be there half an hour after us, not 2 hours after us.
Did they get another two lots of things in then?
I think they did. I mean, not like houses, but picking up a whatever.
Bit of furniture or whatever.
Bit of furniture. Yeah.
Amazing.
But that's just cheeky because they charged me £800. Okay, it's a day's work for two guys and the fuel. But there's some money to be made.
You'd hope so.
And actually, the price from a proper removals firm was like £200 more. Yeah. And I just wish I'd done that now.
Yeah.
But yeah, how would you package it up? Would you put it on a pallet, then a kitchen island, or would you have to make a pallet?
I can't say I've thought that far ahead, but I would say I've got 6 pallets from all of our roof tiles in our garden right now, so I could easily use one of those. It's kind of standard worktop height, so what's that, 80, 88 centimetres maybe? And then I think it's 880 mil long and about 660 deep, something like that.
So not that big, actually.
It's not huge. And also, a lot of the companies that wrote to me said that they strap everything in and provide blankets and things like that. I spent hours trying to get an immaculate finish on this. And when I make something to sell, I want it to be, you know, as good as I can possibly make it. And I would hate for it to arrive and have a big scratch on it or something like that, because I'm not going to Bristol or whatever to repair it.
Oh, Neil McKinley up in Scotland did or does, is they make crates.
Yeah.
I saw one of Neil's stories and like, oh, this crate's just cost me £50 to make the crate now because price has gone up. But you'd feel really confident, but this is so expensive to do. I mean, if you was to make a crate for that, it's probably £100 in sheet goods.
Yeah, and time as well is obviously a factor, because you're probably going to spend the best part of a day making it, I would have thought. Yeah.
And I don't think it's a great experience for the client. They've got to unpackage a crate, and then what do they do with... I mean, me or you would love a crate like that.
And weight is a big factor as well. The oak worktop butcher block thing that I made is about 65 mil thick. And oak is very heavy, as you know.
Yeah.
Then it's got another oak 40 mil shelf on it. And then the Medi MRMDF is, again, very heavy. So the whole thing weighs a lot. I think Shipley, most of their quotes are just based on one man being able to put it in his van, but I don't think he'd be able to load it with one man. So, yeah, I think it'd be a two-man job even just to lift it on the van.
Well, the good thing is if you put it on a pallet, then they know it's a pallet delivery and they'll have a tailgate and a pallet jack.
Yeah.
And then they can do it. I mean, I'm always impressed when I get things delivered on a pallet how skilled the drivers are with a pallet jack. It's amazing.
Yeah.
And actually, I had this one that didn't have a tail lift. Just this, he hovers this pallet jack over the back of the tailgate, and then it lowers down. And amazing stuff.
Yeah.
Shipley want to know the weight of everything precisely, because there's legal limits to what they can put in a van, isn't there?
Yeah. But how do you weigh something like that?
Well, that's what I was going to say. The only thing I could think is you get some kitchen scales and you just weigh every panel before you build it.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Too late for me, but...
You could guesstimate it, couldn't you?
Well, I know that the casters that I put on it are rated up to 450 kilograms, but I can't imagine it weighs any more than 150? I don't know. I struggle with weights. I struggle with estimating weights. It's so difficult.
It's really weird, and the size of the thing affects it. As in, if you pick up a 20 kilo sack of sand or 25 kilo, whatever they are, or a cannonball that weighs exactly the same, the cannonball will feel heavier because it's in a smaller thing. So
smaller,
it's just
mass,
so, it's so hard to do.
That is basically how I do it, though, is how many bags of sand is this?
Because exactly,
you know,
the same.
That a 20 kilogram bag of sand, you can throw it on your shoulder and walk around with it comfortably. If you were carrying two of them, you'd probably struggle a little bit more. Well, I would. I don't know about other people. It always amazes me as well. You see these tradesmen, the guys that were doing our roof, they would put a stack of roof tiles on their shoulder and then walk up a ladder with them. And that takes some real, you know, experience and skill to be able to do that, and to be able to cope with the weight and climb up the roof. And Robin as well.
I do the same with the bag of sand trick. So I guess if you think you can pick one end of this up relatively easily, it's probably going to be under 100 kilos, isn't it?
I would have thought so, yeah. I think I could comfortably carry it with another person. When I was in the workshop and I had to put the casters on the bottom, I had to tip it over. I've got this little waste bin that I pull out from underneath my mitre saw where all of my scraps and offcuts go. I had it just sitting on top of that bin because I could wheel it around and twist it and things like that. But getting it from that onto my workbench to be able to add the casters and then back down onto the floor on my own was a nightmare.
Hello, Matt here. It takes us quite a lot of time to prepare and produce each episode of this podcast, and we'd like to keep putting it out for free. If you enjoy the podcast and you'd like to help, support and shape future episodes, you can find a link to our Patreon page in the show notes, or just search online for Workshop Banter Patreon.
So what are your plans for Christmas then, Matt?
Yes, I think I'm just going to take some time off at Christmas. It's going to be cold, so I don't want to be in the workshop, but also when everyone else is off, I don't want to be out there running machinery in a tent. But nothing that exciting. It's trying to cut back on costs this year. It's not a big lavish Christmas, is it? I mean, you've got your joke hat on, but I'm wearing my hat because I want to keep warm, and I've got my jumper on, but I've got a padded shirt and I've got my long johns on. It's not going to be the most joyous Christmas.
I saw a clip this morning of a guy, a newsreader on ITV News, and he said, "This Christmas will be fine, just as long as you don't want to post anything, get sick, or go anywhere at all." And I thought, yeah, that about sums it up, really.
Or be warm.
Mm.
Yeah, apart from those things, it'd be a great Christmas. So my family tend to get homemade gifts for me every year. They're sick of it. They send me their wish list of all the things they want, and no, they've got some junk I've made. I don't know if you saw my gift guide video, but I bought myself a new one of the CMT grooving blades.
Yeah.
Is it the 6mm one you've got?
It is, but it's the smaller 6mm one.
The 150?
Yeah.
Yeah. You was trying to be cheap, wasn't you?
Yeah. Because
they are cheaper.
I haven't found it to be an issue so far. Actually, I think I might have done once when I wanted to cut something on a sled.
Right.
So I needed that extra height.
Yeah.
But for most applications, it's absolutely fine. Yeah.
I think I even struggled once with the 180mm when I wanted to do a half lap in some quite thick material, and it wasn't actually thick enough to do that. But I think I said in the video, I bought the, stupidly, I try to save money as well, I bought the 35mm bore, and so I had to get a reducing ring, and it kind of fall out, and you drop it into the dust shroud of the table saw, and then have to get a mat, and it's like, this was the worst £10 I ever saved. So when I sold the Axminster table saw, I sold all the accessories with it. And actually, the guy, I think he made tablet stands.
Yeah.
Or phone stands. So at the time, he was trying to put a groove into a bit of wood, and he was using a router. So what he was most interested in was actually using the grooving blade. So he came and spent about an hour in the workshop, and we had an experiment and did that. And he was like, wow, that's going to save me so much time. So he had that. But I bought this new blade. I had the 5mm, gone to the 6mm. And I was like, oh, I'd never really thought about it, that a lot of sheet goods are 6mm or 5.5mm. So I can use it to put in plywood to things.
Mm. Yeah, I did that for some drawer bottoms recently. It worked flawlessly.
That's great, isn't it? So it's worth getting that.
Yeah, the one thing that stood out for me from your gift guide this year was that tape measure, that 2 meter. I forget the name, Hummel for tools or something.
I think I always say Halterforce.
Halterforce,
but I've no idea.
I really butchered that name. But that looks great. It's so small. That's what I want in a tape measure. I want small, thin, something that I can put in my pocket, and metric.
It's weird. Whenever I've worked with builders, they have a real thing about tape measures and mock you for having a small tape measure.
Yeah.
And I can't get my head around it.
Mm.
And someone bought me a present of like an 8 meter long tape measure. And it was really expensive, but I think I used it once, like to check the squareness of the base of the workshop. But
In
the last 6 months, I've probably not measured anything over 2 meters long. I may be building the garden room, but then probably nothing over 3 meters long.
Maybe it's the difference between being a workshop-based joiner and an on-site carpenter or something like that. But I mean, I asked Milwaukee to send me their smallest tape measures, and they sent me this slim tape measure, and it's really chunky. It's like, There's no way I'm going to keep this in my pocket. Their bigger tape measures are fantastic, and I used them when I was laying out the patio and making the pergola, because when you want a long span and you want it to kind of hold its own weight, if you know what I mean, when you pull it out and you don't want it to sag, that's kind of when you need that extra thickness, I find. But for anything small or for anything workshop based, that's just way overkill. I really like those Fisco ones, which are the ones that I use. Basically, I wait until they go on sale and then I buy like four of them just so that I've got, because I lay them around all of the time and forget where I've put them and then can't find them. But I try and always keep one in my pocket. I've got my eye on that one that you showed. It looks good.
They're not cheap, but they're nice things. And I've got the mini crowbar of theirs.
Yeah.
And I used that all the time for years. And actually, I was at my mum's in the summer and their fence panel or neighbour's fence had broken and popped out. And so I use this tiny crowbar to try and pry a whole fence back, and I snapped it.
Oh, no.
And it's still usable. It's only the claw that snapped off, so the other end is still fine for prying. But I'm going to get one of those, because I must have had that for 6 years or something, and I use it all the time. And I just love it, because I've bought myself a new L-box, one of the Bosch L-boxes, and I put together like a household toolkit / if I go anywhere toolkit. So you never think you're going to need a pry bar, but the amount of times you do.
Yeah.
Andy Mack from Gosford Handyman sent me his one, which is metric only. And I think it's on both sides as well.
Yes.
Which is really nice.
Yeah, I do like the idea of having a double-sided. Mine hasn't got the printing on the back. I don't know whether the one that you showed has.
I don't think it does.
No.
I don't know how often I actually use that feature, but having it metric only so you can actually reference off both edges of the tape is just something I use on a daily basis.
Me too, yeah.
The Americans don't have that problem because theirs are all imperial, so they can reference off both. It's just we have tape measures that are stupid. But then, occasionally you do need to take an imperial measurement.
I bet a lot of people like the fact that you can do imperial and metric with one. With one tape measure, but for me it's just an inconvenience.
It's weird how you think of some things like a workbench. I'm thinking, oh, I want it to be 5 foot by 2 foot, and I just think in feet on things like that. And with the workshop, I want it to be 20 feet by 10 feet, but when I actually build it, I will work in metric, and I hate this messed up system.
Yeah, what was it, 1960 or something, we went metric. And yet all of our road signs are still in miles per hour, and we buy a pint at the pub. I've been looking for UPVC windows recently, and it really bothers me when you go onto Marketplace and look at the secondhand ones and someone just says, oh yeah, it's 2 foot by 5 foot or something. It's like, that seems really vague to me. Mm. It feels like you haven't measured it accurately. I want a specific measurement. I don't want to have to travel to you and then measure it myself. I just want you to put the number in metric so that I know it's been accurately measured. Because if someone puts it's 2,560 millimetres or something, it's like, I kind of know you've measured it. Whereas if it's 5 foot by 2 foot, I feel like someone's just gone, yeah, it's about 5 foot by 2 foot. Let's put that.
And for a window, it absolutely has to be the correct size. You can't shave a bit off.
I guess if you're building an outbuilding and you just want a window to put in, you can build your frame to suit.
Yeah.
But if you're finding one for an opening, you want it to be, you know, you want it to be as near as you can find.
Always surprising that it's so expensive to get your double glazing on your house done. The glass for my house would be, the windows would cost £1,000.
Mm-hmm.
And that's if I was buying them. If you're buying them wholesale, imagine even cheaper. But they're going to charge £3,500-£4,000 to come and do it.
That's the fault of these large window companies that want to come in and do a house at a time. And they've got the salesman that will sit down with you and give you a price. And then when you say no, they'll bring it down to bring it down by 50%. They're just salesmen at the end of the day, aren't they? The price of the windows is so detached from the selling point of what they're trying to market to you, kind of thing.
Someone was telling me about kitchens as well. They almost work it out by the value of the house. So if you're in a poorer area in a cheap house, your kitchen's going to be cheaper.
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me. Yeah,
just what you can afford to pay rather than...
Mm. Yeah, when you start breaking it down, it's terrifying what the markup is.
I was talking to someone who worked at a window company and he said, do not use us. And he was telling me about how the salespeople go out and then they price it. If they sell it for that price, they get a huge commission.
Yeah.
So everything in their power to try and get that sale, and everything they knock off eats into their commission.
Mm.
But you're talking like a few £1,000 they could knock off the job and still make money on it.
Yeah.
But sometimes you just want the price to be the price.
Yeah.
The Salvager, a TV series we both loved.
Oh, I loved that show, yeah.
He had a Persian rug on his floor of his workshop, and it used to get covered in sawdust and things. I was like, that's really weird, having a carpet in your workshop.
Mm.
But now, I think I was in a White Stuff or Fat Face shop, and they put Persian rugs down, and they just get carpet tacks and nail them to the floor.
Ah.
And I was looking at that and like, that's a good idea because you don't want a trip hazard, especially in a shop. But also in a workshop, I could buy a Persian rug, nail it to the floor, be nice to stand on, it would look kind of funky on camera.
Yeah.
And will help with acoustics.
Yeah.
A carpet on the floor, acoustic panels on the ceiling.
And are you okay with this Persian rug getting covered in glue, wood stains, varnish?
These are the ones... just cheap Amazon ones, I hate to say, because I was in IKEA and they had proper Persian rugs and they're £1,000.
Yeah.
This, I'm talking more of £100 for a 2 metre by a 2.7 metre one. So that's pretty big.
Yeah. Or even Facebook Marketplace, but I don't know if you find anything that big on there.
Yeah. And I'm quite fussy about the pattern and colour.
Style,
I don't.
Yeah.
And that 100 quid is fine. It's going to get ruined, but that's going to be part of the
charm
of it.
Yeah, totally.
You say glue and stains, but I don't tend to get glue and stains all over my floor.
No? You're tidier than I am then.
I've got the OSB floor and I can see a couple of bits, but I've purposefully been sloppy because it's just a bit of old OSB.
Yeah.
I thought your wood burning stove video was really interesting. Another reason why I want to get the workshop done, because I can heat that.
Yeah.
It's a small space that I can heat, and if I've got just one room that I can be hot in. I mean, in a way, your wood burner must change, like, because my mum's got one and they still put the heating on. I'm like, I wouldn't bother putting the heating on. You've got one room that's really hot and the rest of the house is not cold.
Yeah.
That's kind of fine.
We have our central heating on for about an hour in the morning. So just to take the edge off and make it easier to get out of bed. Because when it's really cold outside, you're like, I can't get motivated to get up. So we have it on an hour in the morning and then basically the wood stove goes on from, 5, 6 p.m. or something. And that's it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's great. And have you had to buy any wood yet?
Not yet, no. Although I am noticing how quickly it goes. But a future project, actually, is I want to make another firewood rack for indoors.
Mm.
I don't know if you saw Andy at Gosforth Handyman's video about his wood stove.
I didn't, no.
That's a fantastic video. He completely blew mine out of the water, to be honest. But he's kind of got a drying process where he has a drying rack outside and then he brings it indoors for a second drying stage. And I want to do that. And I've got a really good idea for a project that I'm really excited about starting. Right, shall we do recommendations?
Go on, you go first.
I've got two videos that both made me laugh. The first one was by John Heiss, and it was called Making Fancy Doorway Trim Moulding. And he did the entire narration for the video in third person. So he was just explaining what John is doing. And there are just some really good comedy moments in it. That made me chuckle quite a lot. And the project itself, just makes this framing this doorway look so interesting. I loved it. Really good. The second video that made me laugh was by Martin Murray Wood Design. I think I've mentioned his channel on this podcast before, but he basically did a parody of a woodworking TV show, and it's called Martin's Handmade Christmas. And he basically mocks the whole television format of woodworking shows, which I think that would entertain, you know, us too, for sure. But yeah, really good, really funny. And again, great projects.
Ah, I'll check those out. So something I've been watching, which I'm sure you've seen and is not going to be of any news to you, is a Stumpy Nubs video about shellac. And I've never used it. And it's interesting that he's just saying what a good finish it is, and it's just fallen out of fashion. But I know you're a fan of it, and it's made me want to really try it.
It's lovely stuff. So many benefits of it. It sticks to anything. It can go under everything as well. So it's kind of like a universal thing. But it's surprisingly durable as well, because I used it on a shelf and a shelving unit that I made in our utility room. And those shelves are constantly getting like bags of cat litter and things thrown on them, gritty things. And it's held up incredibly well.
That's interesting, but the church chair that I restored, I'm pretty sure that was shellac, because it just scrapes off so easily, which I guess is a good thing and a bad thing. But yeah, it's made me want to try it, but it's having the right project as well, isn't it? Mm. And also, I've got shelves full of wood finishes, which I imagine you have.
Yes.
And I've been doing projects like there's just like 2 centimetres in the bottom of a bottle, and you think, oh, well, I'll just use that up on the project, but it only uses half of that amount, and you still got some, and I'm not throwing it away.
Yeah.
And actually, I'm making these cutting boards, and I'm like, I'm sure I used up the mineral oil on the last project, but there's like, oh, 1 centimetre left in the bottom, and that would be absolutely perfect for 2 coats on 2 chopping boards.
Mm. Makes you wonder if you could make some kind of like a concoction of different oils, for example. If you had some Danish oil, some boiled linseed oil, and some mineral oil, put them all together.
I'm definitely into tongue oil is my favourite at the moment. So I just trying to use up everything else and just have one oil-based wood finish. There's no need for more than one oil-based one. Maybe a hard wax oil, but I kind of consider that to be a totally different thing. So that's our Christmas party over. Have a great Christmas, Keith. Have a great Christmas to everyone that listens.
Happy Christmas, everyone.
Thank you for listening. You can find Keith on YouTube by searching for Rag N Bone Brown, and me by searching for Badger Workshop. We have a Patreon page if you'd like to help support us in making future episodes of the podcast. Link to that in the show notes. And we have a Workshop Banter Instagram and Facebook page if you'd like to get in touch, which is @workshopbanter, all one word.